You are listening to The Dirt Logistician, the podcast designed to provide training tips and engage in meaningful discussion to help you and your organization get better at tactical sustainment. Brought to you by the Gold Miner team at Fort Irwin. Train the force. The views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the official position of the National Training Center, the Department of the Army, or the U.S. government.
All right, good afternoon. I am Major Jen Guerra, Wagoneer 02, and today we're going to talk about CP operations and base defense. Today I'm joined by Gold Miner 03 and the 214.
Good morning, team. My name is Major James Rainey. I'm Gold Miner 03. I'm the BSB operations trainer. Been here for about 18 months now.
Good morning, team. My name is Master Sergeant Michael Rogers. I'm Gold Miner 24 Alpha. I am the senior medical enlisted trainer. I've been here for about 13 months now.
I'm Captain Prayer Watson. I am Gold Miner 24, the BCT Medical Company trainer. I've been here for about 18 months. Looking forward to today's discussion.
So today we are going to talk about TOC operations and how they relate to base defense. So I know JR is the 03. You see this a lot. And I would say routinely one of the things that we see in the DSSB is there's a lack of integration across the board for all the companies in terms of how do we manage base defense. And so from my point of view, as an XO trainer and a 02, it's really dependent on the S3 to help integrate and manage that across the formation. And a little bit different with the CSSB, DSSB, right, as they may be integrating some of those units for the first time when they arrive at NTC. So what observations have you seen in a BSB, and do they vary drastically?
So I've seen it. I've seen that base clusters, when they try to exercise, that seems to be the challenge here. It's knowing and communicating with adjacent units is really what's vital. So especially when factoring in the effective distance and of weapon systems, who's to your left and to your right. So the integration pieces, those units that succeed and do very well are the ones that cross coordinate with all their neighboring units. So, Jen, I want to say that the DSSB rotation is usually comprised of Army Reservists, National Guard, who often don't have a lot of time to execute collective training at home station. So, in your opinion, what, if any, impact has that had on the DSSB's ability to execute a solid base defense plan?
Yeah, so I would say routinely they're not very integrated in the DSSB themselves. Absolutely, we 100% believe in adjacent unit coordination as well. I would say across the DSA, the units are not coordinated with each other. They haven't had the opportunity to practice base defense as a battalion. And the best way we can get after that if we cannot accomplish unit training at the battalion level is to make sure that our TACSOP is out there. And then to conduct battle drills, base defense battle drills for the battalion during RSO and I and throughout the rotation, just to help us all kind of get on the same sheet of music and make sure that, you know, our CSC is doing the same thing as our CTC and our maintenance company. We all understand where we're supposed to be in the base defense plan and what it is that we're protecting.
So that's a good point. So protection working groups, they bring up a lot of focus to these elements of base defense, either internal or external. Who are the key or essential personnel that DSSB staff coordinates with to tie into their base defense plans? So I'll lead on with saying that the BSB's, the BEB is probably usually the closest neighbor, and they have a few more combat platforms and capabilities that they could easily use to assist. I would say also looking into those tenant units that need to be integrated, right? Even if they're there for a short duration, maybe they're at a combat halt, maybe they're just there, a maintenance platform is getting serviced or something, and they can turn that gun out to the wire and provide the additional security as they wait in line to be serviced. Your thoughts?
Yeah, so I 100% agree for the DSSB, CSSB. The closest unit is going to be the Aviation Task Force, who, of course, have access to different assets and different feeds than we have. And we absolutely encourage that DSSB, CSSBs routinely go over there, make face-to-face coordination and conversations with them to assist in their base defense planning. And then one thing that we don't routinely see at a DSSB is we don't see a force protection working group. So we won't see that, but it is probably something that we need to start thinking through, right? Who conducts the meeting? Generally, we would recommend as a TTP, the S3 should conduct the meeting. The XO probably chairs it. HHC, if they are running BDOC operations for the DSSB, CSSB, should be in attendance, as well as anyone else that has any stakeholders in the meeting. What do you guys see at the BSB, JR?
So I typically see somewhat of a protection group. It's usually led by the S2 as being the lead proponent for that movement. The S3 has a lot of involvement. As you say, HAC usually runs the BDOC, but tying all those components in together is really where I rely on the XO heavily, and I coach that we need to integrate those protection working groups, but usually spearheaded by the S2. I've seen some friction with being able to invite those units that are adjacent, so that way everybody's tied into that plan. But as unit trains and progresses here at NTC, they usually get a little bit better about those external communications. I like to throw something out to the 2-4 team here. So what would the Role 1 leadership or Role 2 general focus be on in regards to base defense?
There are three things I'd like to focus on in regards to the Role 1's focus for security. The first being SOPs, that they understand their tax ops and what their responsibilities are. Oftentimes, the rehearsals are implied, but they should also be specified. Those rehearsals are essential to understanding not only the treatment to be provided, but also what those key leaders are supposed to do to maintain accountability and submit the required reports. The second thing is information flow, understanding that if there were an event that allowed those Role 1s to be degraded in their capabilities, that they are passing that information up to higher, not only to their S3, but also to the surgeon cell to understand that the MedCop must be adjusted. That means that if the Role 1 is no longer able to take those casualties, they understand who the closest Role 1 is, how that impacts their patient flow, and what additional Class 8 must be requested. Finally, understanding the importance of accountability, of knowing where their personnel are, any platforms that are out potentially at AXPs, and how they're going to pass that information along prior to continuing any patient care. As long as they're focusing on their SOPs, on their information flow, and maintaining accountability, believe that they can have a large role in improving the security.
No, those are all good points. I'd like to shift it a little bit on training. So the gold miners are training the BSBs to employ claymores and AT4s. From the WAG team, do you foresee any defensive measure that the DSSB could employ that would make them successful?
Yeah, so we don't see those type of those pieces of equipment at the DSSB routinely. However, DSSBs, CSSBs could benefit from actually digging in fighting positions. There is at NTC, there is a berm that is already out there and in place, but we can absolutely adjust it and make it work for our formation to utilize our gun trucks that are going to be at the DSA for long periods of time to assist in our base defense. And then the other thing that we don't routinely see from a DSSB, CSSB is concerned about aerial threats, drones and stuff like that. They don't routinely pull drone busters off of the grid, which we absolutely can do. But I think at the BSB, you guys see a lot more employment of those type of assets than we do.
Absolutely. That leads into other TTPs that we're coaching them as well. So we're looking at engagement area development, having them focus on where they want to funnel and kill the enemy. Also try to coach certain types of grid systems that help them identify sectors of responsibility. And this allows quick response by the QRF. Want to shift this over to how we do how we train up to this point. We have Master Sergeant Rogers, 2-4 Alpha. I want to ask you, how do you see the battalions building their training plans from the individual soldier up to a collective?
So that's a great question. So initially, we'll see like their tax ops and their abilities to funnel information of whether or not it's actually going to be fed from the leadership down to the lowest soldier. What we typically see is they'll have these great, you know, plans, and they'll have these great tax ops and these great pieces of information, but it stops at like the platoon sergeant and the PL level. We need to have a solid understanding of what's actually supposed to be led, trained, and developed for these individual soldiers, and whether that's, you know, handing them the tax op and expecting them to read it, that's probably not going to be the case. So what we need to do is develop these medals and actually train these soldiers from the lowest level up to actually accomplish the tax op and the medals that we are trying to train, so these individual soldiers understand the tasks without actually focusing on the page itself and just working through those training ops. So therefore, when they get asked these questions and it becomes a muscle memory statement of, hey, yeah, you know, we bermed in the role too, or we did some form of sector sketch, or we understand our positions on the line to protect ourselves while we're, you know, inside of a BSA, or while we're on the line to actually understand the fundamentals of the training aspects that we are trying to do.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So that you made a lot of good points, especially when it comes to communicating the plan. Communication is key to the plan. So how effectively, and I'll throw this out to the WAG team, how effectively have you seen communication executed, and what TTPs you can draw from those lessons learned? I'll start with the BSA. Within the talk, reports need to be prioritized. There should be a rehearsed expectation of what's actionable information or what's pertinent information that will be transmitted, and treat that just like a battle drill.
Yeah, so I agree. And I'd start off with, communication is only as good as the systems you have to communicate with. So if our radios aren't working, if our JBCPs aren't working, if our systems that we're using to communicate with aren't working, what is the next step in the PACE plan, right? And are we utilizing that effectively? Routinely at the DSSB, the very last step is runner. And we don't start getting to the point where we see in runners until we're about 10, 15 minutes into the battle drill. How much information have you lost because it's not being effectively transmitted to the talk? Mm. And then where is the battalion commander's situational awareness if his talk doesn't understand what's happening because the information is not flowing back to that central location and that central hub where you're supposed to be managing those type of things? So I would say that is one of the biggest problems we see, is the lack of communication sometimes just because we don't have the systems up.
That's a good point. That's a good point. 214, how does Charlie Med react or focus in regards to treatment, evacuation, and patient care?
So that's another great question. So if it comes to the BSA being overrun, or we're taking IDF and different events that are going to cause casualties to be on the BSA itself, we try to incorporate into our lessons learned and into our actual priorities of work to make sure that we have CCPs set up, and we need to get the first sergeants from the FSEs involved to understand where these CCPs are going to be located across the BSA, and actually have them validated not only by that first sergeant but by a medic as well to make sure that we have the proper equipment to treat them. We also need involvement in our MASCAL plans, so therefore we have, again, the first sergeant's buy-in from the FSCs to produce aid and litter teams to not only go to the CCPs, but to come to the role too, so therefore we can move casualties and have the availability to actually treat the casualties that we are seeing. Then as far as a protection plan, obviously we're going to try to protect ourselves inside of the BSA if we are centralized, or if we're not, then we're going to, where we're out on a corner or out on the back, we're going to push those medics out to, you know, protect our line as best as we can with the limited assets that we do have. So hopefully we're centrally located, we're bermed in or C-wired in as a secondary effect. We will protect ourselves as well as our patients while we try to treat them as best of our ability while we're in that protection phase.
Awesome. I appreciate you clarifying that. Let's talk roles and responsibilities. WAG-2, in your opinion, who should manage the base defense plan in the DSSB? The battalion XO, the HAC commander, the S3, and perhaps why?
So I think it's really an S3 function to manage the base defense plan for the entire DSA. Generally, we will see the HHC commander is also the BDOC OIC, and the HHC first sergeant is the BDOC NCOIC, but it is absolutely integral that that command team has a link to the S3 shop, because the BDOC cannot be calling all the shots without the S3 knowing and understanding the picture.
So from the BSA, I've seen it be more personality driven. It could be the S3, it could be the HAC commander. I've seen it to where the HAC commander would be the best candidate based on their workload, which allows the S3 to focus more on that battle tracking, but then goes back to the communication piece of knowing what's going on in the fight. The BDOC location is also key. Whether it's separate or is embedded to the TOC, the BDOC should have comm structure that facilitates the command and control to the area, and also be in contact with their boss to allow situational awareness to be built. So I really appreciate that feedback. We've seen it different ways, but I think it goes to personality driven, and then it goes to position and what their workload looks like at the time. So there's a lot that they have to consider.
Yep, I'd 100% agree with you. And then the last thing I would like to talk about is, I don't know about you, but I have absolutely walked into a talk. We're in the middle of a battle drill being attacked, and it's empty. There's an RTO and the battalion commander, and the rest of the staff is nowhere to be found. So it begs the question, right? What is your battle position in the talk when the DSA or BSA is under attack?
I've seen the same thing. I think it's a lot of confusion and who actually needs to be at the communications helm, who needs to be at the desk receiving reports, and who actually needs to be outside protecting the area. That can't be everybody unless it's things have really gotten bad. But most times it's a lot of chaos that just needs to be controlled. Everybody runs to the fire, but somebody forgets to bring the water hose. So if we bring that back and we do that more deliberately and rehearse it back, garrison, home station, when the time is available, usually those units are able to work out that plan. But even after arriving here at NTC, they have those opportunities where they can rehearse their battle drill dry and see how it works out for them. They can identify where people are not where they need to be and so forth. I really appreciate this discussion from everyone. A lot of great points here. I just wanted to also make sure that we throw out for our listeners, there are a couple references that they can go back to looking at base camps, ATP 3-37 Tech 10, Chapter 5, has a lot of additional references in there that can point you towards interior security and then reinforcing obstacles and to defend in depth. So I can't name them all because there's so many regs out there that you can look through, but those are just a couple if anybody's looking for a place to start.
Yeah, okay. Thank you for joining us for this podcast today. We talked about internal and external integration. We talked force protection working groups, roles of the aid station, and the role 2. Also, resources available to increase our base defense posture, additional training prior to arriving at NTC. Also, what can you do while you're here at NTC? Communications. Casualty care, and finally, we talked about talk operations during this podcast as well. Thank you for your time, and we really appreciate you listening.
If you enjoyed today's podcast, please subscribe. If you have any questions or would like to contact us, you can reach us on Facebook at Goldminer Team National Training Center or by email at ntcgoldminerpodcast@gmail.com.